Chapter 20, Bullies in the Bleachers. A week went by. I received two more letters, one from Hugh Blackwell and the other from Dean Simmons. Blackwell sent me two tickets to Saturday's football game, the last of the season, Columbia versus Harvard. Folded around the tickets was a handwritten note which said, "Parker, see you at the big game. Bring a date. Dinner at Columbia Club still on. Roar, Lion, Roar. Hugh Blackwell." Dean Simmons' note was handwritten, too. It said pretty much the same thing the last one had. "Mr. Robinson, do not fail to show up. Report to me after the game. Dean Simmons." In truth, here it was my senior year, and I had yet to attend a single football game. I wasn't alone there, either. The student body was considered too maverick for something so lightweight and unimportant. And there were too many competing attractions calling us to downtown Manhattan, concerts, museums, theater, and more, for many students to pay much attention to football. Especially since the games were played 100 blocks north of campus, where Columbia's Lawrence A. Wine football stadium was located. If student body interest was tepid when it came to football, alumni interest was not. It mattered greatly to them whether or not the Lions beat the Crimson this coming Saturday, as it surely must to anyone who signed his letters with the opening line of the school's fight song, "Roar, Lion, Roar." I was vexed by the directive, "Bring a date." I had a feeling both Blackwell and Dean Simmons wanted me to show up with a Bryn Mawr cheerleader type, wearing a raccoon coat and waving a pennant on a stick. I wasn't friends with or even acquainted with any women who fit that description, except potentially Monica. She had the looks but lacked the personality. I couldn't see her jumping at the chance to go to a college football game anyway. Besides, she had already said a final goodbye to me. As I pondered other candidates, I felt growing disgust with myself for even weighing the matter at all. Why didn't I just invite whomever I felt like and not worry about it? Why was this a problem for me? Why act so jaded? Probing my conscience, I realized it wasn't just the threats coming from Dean Simmons or the promptings from Professor Hopkins and Aunt Ruth that were motivating me. It was because I was starting to believe this meeting with a Gold Lion alum really was important to my future. A scary sign. Must be senioritis. Since the actual person I would have liked to accompany me was 5,000 miles away in Hawaii, I settled on asking Audrey Hopkins. A trifle young, being not yet a teenager, but she fit the profile closely enough. She would be a fun companion. It would be a favor to the professor, to whom I owed many favors. There would be no entanglements. Plus the added bonus, she would most likely be excited about going, which turned out to be exactly the case. Saturday, when I picked her up, she was swaddled in layers of clothing, thermal underwear, slacks, a turtleneck, two sweaters, a coat, as well as a hat, gloves, earmuffs, and scarf, all testimony to her California-bred sensitivity to cold. I myself was wearing a hooded sweatshirt under my pea coat and expected to be plenty warm enough, it being a perfect fall-winter football afternoon, warm in the sun, nippy in the shade, with blue skies above and no wind. We took the subway to 215th Street and moved with the crowd flowing in the direction of Bakersfield. Passing by the Bronze Lion out front, we entered Wine Stadium, had our tickets torn in half, and went in search of our seats. They turned out to be on the 50-yard line near the top of the bleachers. Climbing up, I didn't see Dean Simmons, nor did I see anyone who looked like he might be a Hugh Blackwell. I did notice that a whole section of seats to our right was reserved and unoccupied. The view down on the field was dazzling. The brilliant green grass, overlaid by the crisp white lines of the gridiron, really stood out. Both teams were currently arrayed along their 20-yard lines, doing warm-up exercises, the crimson doing jumping jacks, the blue and white leg lifts. The Lion mascot was doing warm-ups as well. In the end zone, Harvard's band was performing a rousing marching drill that included the sharp staccato of drumsticks. They were so loud they drowned out the garbled messages coming over the public address system. With 20 minutes to go before kickoff, Audrey requested that we head up to the top of the bleachers so we could look over. The view proved equally collegiate, with glimpses of other athletic fields, the tennis center, the rowing house, and beyond that, the dark Harlem River flowing placidly by. The trees of Inwood Hill Park stood overlooking the shore. During summer, they formed an unbroken canopy of green, but now, bare and sheathed in gray, they looked like spectators themselves, arrayed on their own bleachers, cheering at the river going by. Gazing below, I caught sight of Dean Simmons coming alone up the sidewalk, his collar turned up, his shoulders hunched, and his hands jammed in the pockets of his overcoat. He appeared jittery and nervous.